Tuesday, March 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Busboys and Poets, 450 K Street, Northwest DC. Get more information and RSVP. Go online to bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. That's bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Church, three queer folks got the call and came together. I'm Daffo the Flower with the God Glow Up.
I'm Jay Flower, aka Miss Praise and Prep.
Everybody, Uncle and Father, we're here offering a sanctuary for queer folks.
Here we believe God is for everybody.
This is the show on Inside Out. All right. What's happening, everybody? What's good? Jay Barber, you ain't say your name, Jay Barber.
Right. You just said Uncle and Father.
I was too ready. That's the problem.
You were. We need them to know your name. What's happening, everybody? This is the Inside Out Collective. It's the Fellowship Hall on the Inside Out Collective, a sanctuary for queer folks. But the Inside Out Collective illuminates and celebrates the rich diversity that is the LGBTQIA experience. We are proud to be a part of the legacy of cutting-edge public affairs programming on WPFW, home of Jazz and Justice Radio. Inside Out airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on 89.3 FM and WPFWFM.org. The number to call in today is 202-588-0893. Again, 202-588-0893. We're so glad you tuned in with us today. We're very excited about the show. I'm going to introduce our two guests today and read you a little bit about them. You know, here we go. Jessica Valores. Woo! Applause. Right? An interdisciplinary artist and community facilitator based in Washington, D.C. She weaves together mixed media painting, installation, ritual performance, and social practice to create sacred spaces. Yes, her art activates ancestral wisdom, personal reflection, and community study. Inspired by the earth-based traditions of her Black American and Jewish ancestry, Jessica engages metaphysics, spirituality, and Afrofuturism in her work. Yeah, awesome. It's wonderful work. I've seen it. I haven't seen it all, but I've seen enough. Not enough, because it's never enough, but I've seen a good amount of it, and it's so visceral. It's so earthen. It's so real, so creative, right? So she's currently a Culture and Narrative Fellow with the Opportunity Agenda, and right now, Iterations of her recent body of work, Black Fugitive Folklore, have been shown all over Phillips Collection, Krieger Museum, The Reach at the Kennedy Center, all of these things. So I'm just so very glad to have Jessica Valores with us today to talk with the Fellowship Hall. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you. Hey, y'all. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, so grateful to have you. And we have one more guest with us. We're so grateful. It's abundance, y'all. It's abundance. Coach Frazier, here we go. For a long time, Coach Frazier felt spiritual but disconnected from religion. That all changed after taking a college course on world religions. I know that course was wild. I can't imagine how interesting it was. Coming out as trans and queer was one thing, but coming out as Jewish would be a different kind of experience. Frazier, 42, grew up in an African-American Methodist Episcopal household in Kansas City, Missouri. He went on to earn his bachelor's degree at St. Louis University and a doctorate in audiology at Central Michigan University. Frazier moved to Philadelphia area to enroll in the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College in Wincote, where he has been a student since fall of 2018. And he lives in West Philadelphia and is a member of, I'm going to do my best to say it right, but please correct me, Cole Sedek. Did I do it?
You did it.
Bless. I try really hard.
You did great.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. Earlier this year, you were named an LGBTQ Jewish hero by Keshet, a national organization working towards the inclusion of LGBTQ Jews in Jewish life. Welcome, Coach Frazier. We're so happy to have you here in the Fellowship Hall.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, for sure. So I want to get back to Jessica. So, yes, tell me, I loved how you talked about Black liberation theology, right? And so my understanding basically is kind of like Black people's realization that white Christianity was rigged and not true Christianity. And Jesus was on the side of the oppressed, not the massa, right? Mm-hmm. And just that whole notion, like, and they had, like, it's so crazy, all the things. We already know it was a wild time, like America's a wild place racially, all of these things. But they even had a slave Bible, right, that perpetuated docileness. They didn't have the Old Testament in it. It didn't have anything that would incite rebellion. It just had obey your masters, all of these things. So can you speak more on Black liberation theology and the work you've done and all of these things?
For sure. I can share what I know. I'm definitely not an expert. But, you know, anywhere African people went, we've made things our own. We've remixed things with our neighbors or the people we found ourselves cohabitating with or stolen by or mixing ourselves with or harbored by. So there's not much in America that hasn't been touched by Black folks and the things that we retained from the continent. And yes, you're right, exactly right about during slavery, the way Christianity was used to basically control Black folks by making sure that they didn't have access to certain scriptures, that even enslaved people who were preachers weren't allowed to preach certain sermons or talk about certain scriptures. So it's very, even their access to Christianity was policed. But, you know, Black folks, we always gonna find a way to bend and remix things and make things work for us. And so there were a lot of African spiritual practices that were retained and that were like hidden within Christianity. It's called syncretism when people kind of like bring together different cultures, traditions, and specifically spiritual traditions. And for us, because we weren't allowed to where our ancestors, our enslaved ancestors, weren't allowed to practice a lot of their traditions, they found ways to hide them within Christianity. And so you see kind of this confluence of what becomes what people have now looked at as like Black liberation theology that really comes from the practices of enslaved people trying to figure out how to work with what they had. And you see that in religion, you see that in food, you see that in trades, you see that in our art, you see that in our music, our dance. There's lots of ways that happens. Half my family is Christian, but the other half, and the half that I was really raised within, or the spirituality I was raised within, was Judaism. And something that I started to find as I started to reconnect with that tradition was really to reconnect with the story of Exodus and the story of Moses. And I think about how much, as I've been doing a lot of my work is around histories of enslaved resistance, how much Black folks who were enslaved were looking towards these stories as ways to inspire their own escape and their own notion of what liberation could look like. And so even Harriet Tubman, who I think is like one of the original Afrofuturists, she is called Moses. And so we think about, you know, just all the ways that story speaks to being in this in-between space after you've escaped slavery, but not yet completely free or liberated. And I think we're actually still living in that liminal space as Black folks. And so a lot of my art is about that and celebrating the ancestors that made emancipation possible. So yeah, I'll stop there. That's a lot.
Yeah. No, that was excellent. And it's so interesting. Yes, the connection between the oppressed and the enslaved and Exodus and liberation and the Hebrew, you know, all of that tying together, you know, and I guess, you know, I don't know. How do you include your Jewish ancestry in your art? Or, you know, I feel like, you know, I don't know. How do you include that in your art? Or how does that come through in your art?
Yeah, it's really present in the process because I think of art as a sacred practice. And so there's a lot of things that, you know, people might experience the art and not see that, like the Jewishness might not be legible to them. And to me, Judaism is an African religion. It comes out of Kemet. So it's hard for me to separate what is Black and what is Jewish. So in terms of my spirituality and my understanding of our relationship to spirit, our relationship to the earth, our relationship to each other. And so, those things, it's hard for me to tease out, oh, here's the Jewish part, because it's also the Black part. So yeah, I think in terms of process, like words are really important, text, numbers, incantations, thinking about like, what is the music I'm playing while I'm creating a thing? Sometimes I move around that thing in a particular way because I think about energy and like, just like the movement of our bodies is a form of prayer. So all of those things are like a part of my practice. And I also like to think of my artwork as like creating amulets that can support transformation for us now as we continue to figure out how to survive capitalism and patriarchy and racism and white supremacy and all the isms. And so I think of like my artwork and the way that I gather folks to participate as a form of like spiritual protection and really as a form of like conjure, like a way for us to protect each other and to protect each other through our cultural traditions.
Yeah. Awesome. And it's so interesting because like when you say Black Jews or Black, you know, Judaism is a Black religion. Like, you know, I'm like the Black Hebrews out there on the corner screaming at you and stuff. That's what some people think. But like, and you could definitely please speak to this coach as well. Like, but there's a wider array of people who subscribe to Judaism. It's not just the folks on the corner looking all wild, screaming everybody out. You know what I mean?
It definitely ain't just them.
Yeah, speak more, coach. Speak more.
Right. And it is them, right? Like what I understand as my siblings, you know, like they're doing what's best for them. You know, thank God, I bless them where they at. And Amen. Also, I think about all of the ancestors who came through the transatlantic slave trade and the Arab slave trade, right? Bringing the Hebrew and Israelite traditions to us. They brought it to us from the land of Africa, right? Mm-hmm. And what it was retained. And you now see the Hebrew Israelites who have been here, not necessarily the Black Hebrew Israelites. That's a sect of Hebrew Israelite tradition. But we think about a lot of those folks who came and never subscribed to Christianity because that wasn't their religion. And to think about Exodus, the story of Exodus, being our story. It was never a story that was given to us by white folks. It was a story we understood about our own history, our own liberation. We knew we'd been through this before. Mm. Our people had been through that before. So we knew we could do it again. We already had spiritual technology for it. And to know that our people were already in the mindset of, we know who our person is. When you look at even slave narratives, you can see some of this come up. When you look at the journals of the chaplains in the army, right? Mm-hmm. They'll say, I don't understand why these people keep talking about Moses. They were trying to introduce Hebrew Israelites to Jesus. And they were like, that ain't our person. We know Moshe. We know Moses, and we know that Moses led us to liberation, right? And also, like, I'll just say one other thing, that oftentimes you'll see these slave narratives, and they'll talk about Muslims, the Muslims that were enslaved, but they talk about them praying three times a day. Well, Muslims pray five times a day. Mm. And what I'm starting to notice as I'm going through these slave narratives is I'm picking out what I see as Hebrew and Israelite that haven't yet been identified. And oftentimes they get lumped in with Islam or Muslims. And when I get time in my free time, ha ha ha, we'll figure out how to like consolidate that information so that it's available for people. Cause we've been out here. We've been here. We ain't going nowhere. And, you know, the way in which white supremacy has gotten our light-skinned, white-skinned siblings all mixed up, that's all right. We're going to bring them back home. We'll be all right.
For sure. If you know kind of deal, huh? You like, oh, yeah. I see that. Kind of the same in your artwork. You have the symbolism, the numbers, all of that, Jessica. Yeah, man.
I would say, too, and I think this is another thing that's like, it's Black and Jewish, but like just like a real deep reverence for ancestors and treating them and communicating with them as if they are still here, because they are. They're still present. They're still here for us. They're still here to support us and protect us. And the work that they started is not over. Thinking about what is our legacy, we will be ancestors too at one day. So like, what are the things we're leaving behind for the folks who are coming after us? And you know, our lives are incrementally better because of what our ancestors did. And so how can we continue that cycle?
Indeed. And it's when you say just another religious connection, but when you say, you know, like our ancestors are still here. I was reading this book by Thich Nhat Hanh, I think it's called Fear, or How to Deal with Fear. And it's this notion of no birth, no death, no fear, right? So it's kind of like, you know, the spirit has been here. The spirit is in this body. Mm-hmm. The body passed away, yet the spirit is still here. So it's nothing to fear. And just that reverence for ancestors and knowing that they're still around. I really appreciated that view in that book. It really just blew my mind a bit, like, wow. But of course, you know, I feel, you know, it's hard to, you know, we're humans. It's hard to sometimes deal with them not being in the physical, but the rituals, the artwork that we make, the studies that we do definitely contribute to keeping their spirit connected with us in a strong way. You know what I mean? So yeah. I appreciate that. Jay Barber.
I have a question. So we, in present time, I've been seeing this in movements, not even just in Judaism when it comes to Black Israelites, but also with Muslims when it comes to like Nation of Islam. why do you feel like there are these distancing that happens within these groups? Like, instead of, you know, coming together and talking on it, you know what I'm saying? It just seems more of a, well, we're not like them kind of situation, rather than a way to find commonalities.
You want to take this, Koa?
Well, I think we both can speak to this, but one thing, like, white supremacy is insidious, and it will have us thinking that if we can get rid of, if we get at white folks, then we don't ever think we'll get rid of supremacy. We're getting rid of the white part, right? So in learning from the oppressor, the system of the frameworks of oppression, some people just are like, well, I'll be on top and it'll be fine. And we know that, we're not supposed to use the tools of our oppressors. And so there, again, you know, I feel like one day we'll figure this out and we'll figure out how to be together. But at this point, I think that we're some of us get stuck in that, and it's unfortunate. And I hope that we'll find a way to mend the gap. And part of that too is I think rabbinic Jews have done a lot of harm. And I'm including black rabbinic Jews in that. And that harm has been perpetuated against our siblings so much so that they have felt and not have even felt, they have been isolated from community. And I think it's up to us to do that reconciliatory work. And it's happening. It's happening. It's slow, but it's happening. And I think that once our siblings understand that we are, that we're in the same boat here, as it were, and that we can actually do this together. What do you say, Jess? Well, oh, go ahead, Jay.
I was just saying, it really speaks to what you're saying, kind of speaks to Isabel Wilkerson's book, when she talks about caste and how caste kind of forms this hierarchy situation within groups, like just within groups. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my answer was the same. I was just going to say white supremacy. I think specifically for Black folks in the United States, too, that we, because of the ways that our communities have been targeted and the blatant and ongoing violence and terror that they've survived, that I think there are communities that have created themselves to protect themselves. And so some of that protection looks like isolation, but is a form of trying to protect ourselves from the terrors of white supremacy. So I think that's a piece of it, is like, actually some of it comes from our own desire and way to like preserve ourselves. But then sometimes we are also not necessarily doing the work to, like Koak said, to like uproot the supremacy, the internalized supremacy and internalized inferiority. And so we end up replicating some of the same conditions while at the same time, those terrors are still active. That's not something in the past. Like, that's something that's continuing to happen. So like, even within Jewish community, really within any religious community, they are, even though people may be spiritual, and y'all know this, but like, they are not immune from replicating the same power dynamics of sexism, heterosexism, transphobia, racism. Like, all of that exists and continues to persist. So I think that's also some of what gets in the way of folks like creating some kind of like sacred unity, because all of these isms. So
thank you for sharing that, Jessica, and thank you so much, Koak. This is Jay Flower here, and I just wanted to let our listeners know that you are listening to Fellowship Hall, a sanctuary for queer folks. And over the past maybe a year and a half, we've had queer Buddhists come on the radio with us. We've had queer Hindu folks call us. We've talked to ministers talk about reconciliation in the Christian faith. We've yet to talk to any Muslims Or, you know, we've still got a long way to go, a lot of the world to explore. But I'm just so grateful that the listeners know that we are speaking to two Black, queer, and allied, wink, wink, and allied Jewish folks. And we all know what we think and what we see when we hear the word Jew. And this is us taking the time and the very important effort to make sure that even that religion too is inclusive of us, and we're doing our part to reconcile that as well. So thank you both just for being here, and thank you to our listeners. If we have any listeners who are interested in Judaism, who have a Black Jewish experience, who have a queer Jewish experience, please call us at 202-588-0893. Again, that number to call in the WPFW and talk to us about the Jewish, the Black queer Jewish experience, 202-588-0893. And before we go to break, Koak, you mentioned that's some reconciliation. We've had a lot of challenging words today. Let's get it. Reconciliation is happening in Jewish faith practices and spaces. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What's happening? Are y'all having conventions? Are people like putting flags? You know, like what's going on?
Not flags yet, but you know, the 12 tribes all have flags with their different encampments around the Mishkan. So maybe we'll get some flags. But as of right now, what we're doing is we're moving towards study with each other, because you know we like to study a lot, but we also like to do practice. So we're thinking about like how we can both do practice together, pray together, and also study. And so we've been doing some of that over the course of the last few years. And right now, I don't know if it's too quick to say this, but there is information, a council, a joint council between Hebrew Israelite spiritual leaders and rabbinic Black rabbinic leaders to be together and to like do the work of that reconciliation on the like leadership level. But on the lay level, it's happening, and thank God that it is.
Nice. So we're about to go to break, but before we go to break, we're going to play a little music selection. It's Lenny Kravitz, I Belong to You. And it kind of works because we belong to each other, you know, we belong to each other, you know? So, we'll hear
my favorite Lenny Kravitz song in the world. It's just it's so lovely.
It is.
It is
very vibey. So we're going to hear, I Belong to You, and then we'll hit the station break, and then we'll be back. This is the Fellowship Hall on Inside Out.
Living you the most in every way. Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. Apply online now, no later than Friday, March 29th, by going to the website www.diversecityfund.org. You can send email to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are online to answer all your questions. See www.diversecityfund.org or call 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Diverse City Fund ofrece subvenciones para agentes de cambio de color en la capital de la nación. Financiamos el trabajo de justicia racial y social por y para líderes de color en D.C. Solicite una subvención en línea hoy, al más tardar el viernes 29 de marzo, visitando el sitio web www.diversecityfund.org. Fechas y horarios y grabaciones de las sesiones informativas pasadas están en nuestra página web. Para preguntas, visiten www.diversecityfund.org o llamen al 202-743-0130. Eso es 202-743-0130.
Hey, 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 you are listening to the Fellowship Hall, a sanctuary for queer folks, a part of the Inside Out Collective that happens every Monday at 6 p.m. until 7 p.m. You're listening to Jade Flower Foster, Jay Barber, and Daffo the Flower on WPFW 89.3 FM or WPFWFM.org. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Yes.
Welcome.
Yes, yes, yes. Pull up on our phone lines, though. Call us. Call me now. Call us now.
Exactly.
202-588-0893. Once again, 202-588-0893. So we're back into it, y'all. So, Co-op, you are in charge, or you tell me more about the Black Trans Torah Club.
Yeah, so during the pandemic, we collected ourselves, thinking about each other, wanting to find ways to connect across the borders. And so there has been a collective of us who have been studying Torah for the last several years. We study the weekly parsha, the weekly portion of Torah for the week. And we also have been supportive of each other. We've been there. We've become family to each other. So when someone dies and we don't have a space to say Kaddish, to say the memorial prayer, we've collected ourselves for that. When folks have had birthdays or book releases, we've been there for each other. And it's been a lovely space. We've had folks, in South Africa, in the UK, and across the United States. And it's been a wonderful gathering. We're still doing it. We don't do it every week anymore, but we're still getting together and enjoying each other. So, yeah. And people are more than welcome to come, as long as you're Black, you trans, and you're Jewish. and those are the requirements, as it were, to be a part of it. But folks are welcome to join.
That's awesome. Yeah, man. Good. Not a good Bible study, but kind of in, you know, for a Christian, a good Bible study, right?
You know? yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We dig into the word of the Hebrew Bible. There it is.
For sure. And it's so much joy in community, and especially like finding community within the Jewish community, like, you know, you Black, you trans and Jewish, like, whoa. Here we are together. Like, check us out, you know?
We out here.
Y'all are out here.
Something, if I could just jump in, something I really
that I grew up with in my church was really important to our leadership was that we had a rite of passage, that a lot of cultures have rites of passages. And something we were inspired by was the bat mitzvah and the bar mitzvah. So Jessica, if you wouldn't mind telling us if you had one and what that experience was like for you. And then also Koach, if you, my question for you is, in your transition and in, also I read in your bio that you converted to Judaism. So did you have one for yourself or is that breaking the rules? So Jessica, if you could start.
Yeah, I definitely had a bat mitzvah and it was interesting. My experience with Judaism. So my my mother's family immigrated from Lithuania and Ukraine. And so they came here, lived in Philly and then moved to D.C. And brought their Jewish traditions, but weren't very, my mom, you know, they're immigrants. So they're also trying to assimilate at the same time. So a lot of their practices, some of their practices were chained without necessarily like a lot of religiosity. I don't know how to explain that. So my mom didn't bring me to synagogue till we were about like 8 or 9. I was 8 or 9. And a friend of hers was like, your child needs like a spiritual experience. Our family was going through some transitions and that was my mom's tradition. So she was like, she brought us to a synagogue. And for me as a Black child, it was my first time in Jewish community. It was my first time in white, in an all white space. Mm-hmm. So it was very alienating for me. And so we started going to Hebrew school. It was like a Wednesday and Sunday type of thing. But we weren't like really practicing at our home. We didn't keep kosher. We went to like, you know, the important services. And then it was time for me to have a bat mitzvah. And it was the first time, well, maybe not the first time for this synagogue, but maybe like a handful of times where like it was a whole rack of Black folks in the synagogue. Family. And I just remember just feeling both a sense of pride, but also like, y'all ain't know it could be cool like this. Like, it was both an alienating, but also like an expansive experience at the same time. And I think I put Judaism away for a while because I didn't understand how I could, like, I couldn't figure out how to be both Black and Jewish, like, because I had experienced Judaism in a very white space. And now I'm actually a part of Black Jewish Liberation Collective, which Koach was one of the founding members of, which has really been a transformative space for me to kind of come back into Jewishness through Black community. And that feels really important. So yeah, but the bat mitzvah was lit. I had lots of presents and basically it was like an excuse to have a party. But you have to like do a lot of study in order to have it. So yeah.
Nice. Thank you for sharing. Kinsieres, bat mitzvahs, all the things. Like I think they're so important. So Koach, did you have one for yourself or once you're 13, it's just no.
Oh, no, you can have one. You can have one. I'll tell you a little about it. But first I'll just say that oftentimes the word conversion is not one that I would use for myself, and other Black folks would neither, just to say that a lot of times we call it a reversion, because we were told we were Christian. That's the way we were raised, and that is not who we are. And so I just wanted to offer that because there are some people who I think would say that they converted, but mine was a reversion back to my the truth of who I am. And I had a bar bat mitzvah. As a trans person, I didn't know what to call it, and I didn't want to call it. And also, as a person who was interested in Hebrew grammar, if you call something b'nei, that's still masculine, even though it's plural. And so I also didn't want to deny the fact that I was raised and conditioned as a Black girl in this country. And that is also a part of who I am. And so I called it a bar bat. So I had that back in 2016 and it was lovely. My parents who were not Jewish came all the way from Florida and got to see me read Torah in public, and it's very beautiful. It was a wonderful time.
Yeah,
Dope. Okay. I don't know what made me think of that. I just was like, wow, that's so tight, you know? And I'm glad you held that for yourself and that your family made space for you. And I will definitely keep that offering of reversion, right? Because I grew up in the same way. Like there's no difference between Black and Jewish. And then I also grew up in a household where it was like Jesus is a Black man. So it's just one of those things, depending on who you talk to.
Absolutely. And I'll say one other thing, when I had my bar bat mitzvah, I also have these adoptive parents, these Jewish women, and so when as a trans person who was like trans masculine, it was really funny but also true. My mama got up and said, "Today you've become a man," in which it was a really wonderful thing to say to a trans person who is like has been through this transition and has not been always affirmed in my transness. And so it was really wonderful to be in this public space with all these people who love me, where my not my birth mom, but my adoptive mama said, "Hey, today you are a man," and people stopped and were like, "Yes, this is true." It was great.
Nice.
That is great. I have a quick question for both of you. Do you think there is a difference between Judaism and Jewishness?
You done hit him on the head with that one,
Right.
Jay.
Like, I feel like there's so many different forms. There's so many different expressions of, I don't know phonetically what's the difference between Judaism and Jewishness, but I feel like there's so many different expressions. And I think most of what folks know in the United States is through the lens of a particular wave of Jewish immigration from Eastern Europe. Eastern and Western Europe, but there's Jews from the Arab world, there's Jews from North Africa, South Africa, Nigeria, Uganda, there's Jews from the Caribbean. There were Jews who, white Jews or Sephardic Jews who were slave owners, and so they're enslaved people who also have Jewish traditions that they, remixed and created from their own Jewish enslavers. So there's so many different kinds, and you can even go like into the Balkans. Like there's like all different forms of Jewishness, but what we get fed here in America is a very limited and narrow and very white perspective of what Jewish identity is. And I would say maybe there is a difference between, I think, because some people might identify as culturally Jewish, but not religiously practicing Judaism. And I think both identities are equally as valid. But maybe are some distinctions there.
Yeah. So in general, like Black Jews and the LGBTQIA, how does this work? Is it like how I know, okay, in the Black Christian church, don't be gay. Oh no. But the choir director, what are you talking about? Like, okay, so how do y'all roll in Judaism with the LGBTQIA?
Depends on where you go. There are it's a mixed bag, particularly in Black Jewish space, in all Black Jewish space. I know lots of people who stay in their closet, as it were, so that they don't have to deal with the discrimination that happens. And there are some places that have been designed specifically for Black, queer, Jewish folks, and so like we don't have that over our heads in that space. And in the kind of liberal white Jewish world, most people have gotten their act together. And depending on where you go, you might not want to tell nobody about your sexuality or your gender. But you go to a lot of these synagogues these days, particularly white synagogues. There is either very specific restrooms for gender non-conforming people or trans folks. And then there are bathrooms where there's just a bathroom for everybody. And the stalls are such that the door goes from the ceiling to the floor, and everybody goes to use the restroom together. There's just all these different ways in which they have accommodated, particularly gender flexible people. But in terms of sexuality, like they've like, there's different prayers for your gay spouse that's passed away or all this other stuff. Like they've really done, I think, a good job of being, I would say trying to be, you know, open and affirming to queer folks. And what I'll say is that I, in my community with Hebrew Israelites, we talk a lot about how there's that part that they have to learn from us that they haven't gotten there just yet. And there's so much that we can learn from them.
For sure. For sure. So you're in rabbinical school, right? To become a rabbi, right?
Absolutely. With God's help, Bezrat Hashem, I will be ordained on May 19th, the day that Malcolm X was born, this Black trans Jew.
Let's become
a rabbi. And will be the first Black trans rabbi in this country, as far as I know.
Let's go. Wow. Wow. Wonderful. So how has it been being Black trans queer in rabbinical school? What does that feel like? And you're the first, like, what? Wow. All of these things.
It's been fun. There's a lot of learning that, both the school and I have had to do. Mm-hmm. And now there are four Black students, another trans, Black trans person is there. There's now enough of us that we've created a Black student union, which is the first time that has happened outside of the Black or the Hebrew Israelite seminaries that are here in the United States. And so like things are well, you know, it's taken a minute for people to, you know, get their bearings. And also I check off a lot of boxes for them. So, they appreciate that.
Yeah. Blazing the trail. That is amazing. Like, that is amazing. And it's so wild. Like, you know, how it's like the first Black woman or first Black something. It's so wild to keep having these firsts. But I'm glad that they are happening. Jade Flower, I saw your hand.
Yeah, I just was going to say, it's like what Jessica said earlier in the conversation, that we are ancestors eventually, not today, but eventually we will be somebody's ancestor. And what a legacy to leave for your generations to come, for both of you. We're cutting down on time, so I do want to make sure that you both get a chance to speak about any projects you have coming up, anything you want our audience to know. Again, you all are listening to Inside Out Collective, and today we are talking about being Black, being queer, and being Jewish, and being an ally as well. And I also wanted to ask you both, or one of you, to speak a bit on how folks can find out more about the Black Jewish Liberation Collective.
Yeah, blackjewishliberationcollective.org. You can check us out. There's a little contact form if you want to join. We have programming throughout the year. We do a Juneteenth Seder. We do a Kwanzaa Seder. We, when necessary, run Angry Black Shabbats. And we have working groups. So we also do a lot of study together, both spiritual study and working on racial justice, working on anti-Zionist work, working on Palestinian solidarity. So if you are a leftist Black Jew, and I've also said there's a lot of queer folks in Black Jewish Liberation Collective. That is a huge part of our identity. And so, yeah, if you're interested in being involved or interested in learning, we also, you know, share our learnings with folks. We have resource lists and things like that. Check out blackjewishliberationcollective.org. And we're also on Instagram at Black Jewish Liberation Collective.
Thanks. Anything coming up for you, Jessica?
Yeah, I have a show this week that opens on Saturday. It's called Decipher at DCAC in Adams Morgan. D-A Cipher, S-Y-P-H-E-R. So go check that out. It'll be up for the next month and a half. And it's a group of us. So it's different artists, Black artists in DC.
Yay.
Oh, thank you. And Koak, anything going on for you outside of studying and getting ready for that next? To wear that hat, literally.
Yeah. Well, I just also I'm a singer-songwriter, and a track was just released on all the streaming platforms called Ye Froth. And it was a part of a project called that's called Beit Torah Ta, where it's this really dope project where they have literally regendered the entire Torah. So Moshe's a woman, Esther's a man. It's so fantastic. But the ways in which they have worked with the Hebrew, they've basically all of the Hebrew is feminine versus the Torah, all of it's masculine. And so they had this fellowship where we could make songs. And so if you look for Beit Torah Ta, or if you look for Torah Ta Music Fellowship, you'll find it there. It was a wonderful project to work on.
Spell Torah Ta.
Oh, T-O-R-A-T-A-H.
And you know, go ahead, Jess.
I want to add one more thing. Keep a lookout for the DC History Conference that's happening April 4th, 5th, and 6th. I'll also be there sharing a really exciting project called the Black Fugitivity Study Kit. So more on that soon.
And can I just add one more thing, which I think, Jess, weren't you on the mix of the Black Jewish mixtape?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So a couple of years ago, we put out a mixtape, and there's all kind of Black Jewish music that you can have access to. And I think it's on SoundCloud, but it's the Black Jewish mixtape.
Yeah.
Dude. Y'all, anything else? Because we got time.
Come on. What else you got? What else?
And you know what? While you were talking, Jessica, I heard Shabbat. And I heard about three other words that I never heard before in my life, right? And I think it's so funny how media really forms what we know about each other, right? That's one of those borders for us as American people, as people. It's just like, we only know what we see on TV or what we've read in a book. So just a real quick Jewish vocab lesson.
Yes.
What is Shabbat? Okay.
Shabbat is the holiest holiday. And it happens every Friday. Basically, it's okay. Like the holiest holiday that we have. Every Friday is, you know, it's our day of rest. So it starts Friday night and goes through Saturday. And it's really just to mark that time as sacred and as a time for us to reconnect with family, to enjoy each other, to celebrate together, and to just like bask in our sanctity. So traditionally, folks like either won't use technology, won't watch TV, will turn off their phones, will like spend time in nature. There's all different ways that people practice. And usually dinner and food and music is involved. So that's Shabbat.
Nice.
Oh, did I get that? It was anything you would ask?
Oh, that was great. I was going to say, if you've heard of sabbatical, that's where it comes from.
From that word. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that comes from that word Shabbat. Yeah.
You mentioned another.
I think we talked about Kwanzaa. And, okay. And Seder.
Seder.
Yeah.
We can figure that out.
Yeah. Let's so a Seder is a it's a performance, as it were. It typically we do Seders on Passover, Pesach. And, it's a way of remembering, that Exodus story. And so there's food, there's a particular, plate, which I consider to be an ancestor plate, but we can talk about that some other time. But we got this plate that has all these foods that are connected to that story. And we retell the story. We retell the Passover, the Exodus story every year. And it's done in this particular order, which is what Seder means. And we've taken that framework. It's been used to do other holidays like Tu B'Shvat, which happened just not too long ago, which is a celebration of nature. And the it's a new year of the trees. And also we've taken it for Juneteenth. So Our Hebrew Israelites siblings say that's what Passover is to them, but we've created a whole Juneteenth Seder that corresponds to the rituals of Juneteenth, and in the order that we would consider that we would traditionally do Pesach. And then I'll just say Kwanzaa is a holiday that we created, and I'll let Jess talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Black Jewish Liberation Collective created Kwanzaa as a holiday that we celebrate, and it's basically combining Kwanzaa and Hanukkah traditions. And so we add, in Hanukkah, you have 8 days. And so we add a ninth day. And the principle of the ninth day is courage. And it's, we call it Erev Rav, which is like basically courage of the heart. And and just think about what does it mean to be like embodying different values and looking at like the Nguza Saba, incorporating that into our Jewish traditions and our Black traditions and bringing those together.
Wow. Yo, thank y'all so much. Thank you so much, Jessica. Thank you so much, Kowak. Much love to you all. Jay Barber, Jay Flower, you know. You're listening to the Fellowship Hall, where every third Monday is a sanctuary for queer folks, and we're part of the Inside Out Collective that happens every Monday from 6 until 7 on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. It's the Fellowship Hall, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are out.
Thank y'all.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Invited to the timely book event with Jake Johnston about his new book, Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti. Tuesday, March 19th at 6 p.m. How did a nation founded on liberation, a people that successfully revolted against their colonizers and enslavers, come to such a precipice, to a state of near collapse? Hear from Jake Johnston of the Center for Economic and Policy Research on how long-standing U.S. and European capitalist goals ensnared and re-enslaved Haiti under the guise of helping it. Jake will be joined by former member of Congress Andy Levine and Dr. Nathalie Frederick-Pierre, assistant professor of African diaspora history at Howard University. That's Tuesday, March 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Busboys and Poets, 450 K Street, Northwest D.C. Get more information and RSVP. Go online to bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. That's bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15th to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, founder of the Haiti Support Project, known as HSP. If you've been listening to WPFW, you're aware that Haiti is on fire with gangs threatening to seize power. HSP is hosting a forum for leaders of the Montana Accord movement in Haiti to discuss the urgent need to organize to compel the U.S. government to respect the sovereignty of the first Black.